Jason Smith is a host of Jason and John, 11 to 2 p.m. right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He's on X at Jason Smith 92.9. Jason, what's happening?
What's up, brother? I'm ready to talk some football with a real football guy.
Oh, you want to talk football off the top? I was gonna open on at least the news we got today from Memphis basketball. Then we can get into the football
part. We will do. I suspected as much. I suspected that I would be put in my basketball box like many others do to me, Gabe. No, and they would ask me.
No. We have different bags. You have your football bag. You have your college football bag, your NFL bag.
I need to get you
in your college basketball bag to start.
We'll knock that out, and then we're going to do what I really look forward to doing with you, which is, man, pro level, college level, big game in Tallahassee. But let's go. Let's knock out this this depth peak.
Yes. All right, junior college forward Budakibi commits to Memphis. Tell me what I need to know. Tell me what you think I need to know.
I don't know anything about the kind of play. No, seriously. I mean, you don't expect him to play. Historically, Penny Hardaway hasn't played these guys, and you're probably in a position where, you know, he's going to have to go with the guys that can get him with the guys that have been there since June. The ones that he's paid to come get the job done and get him back in the tournament and obviously, hopefully, a run beyond that, you know, a run to a second weekend. And listen, my hope is that this is a player who can help you for a couple of years. Because all jokes aside, what Penny Hardaway has needed more of are guys in their roles. And I think, Gabe, you and I have talked about this 2 years ago, a couple seasons ago, when you had Kendrick Davis, DeAndre, and then let's be real. I mean, no slight to these guys, but it was a bunch of role players. It was guys who knew their role. Frankly, it was the best chemistry Penny Hardaway's ever had. And so having role guys, super important. Everybody can't be a guy that can have the ball in their hands and average 15. And you look up and, you know, you look at that roster, you know who those guys are. You're going to need people at some point, whether it's this year or next year, next couple of years, as you try to build back to some continuity, guys to play roles. And this certainly looks like a guy who, maybe next year, Musa. I think is Tyreek 1 year or two? I think he's 1 year. So yeah. It would add some depth there in terms of with your bigs. And, you know, with Penny Hardaway, I mean, we could talk about these multiple-year guys and who could be here for a second or third year. But, frankly, what it's been of late is turnover. And so even if it's a guy that's got 2 or 3 years, are they going to be here? You know, are they going to stay? Are you going to find, you know, how many more DeAndre Williams are there out there? My hope is that, I mean, that's the way back to some continuity in a world, Gabe, where you're not going to stop hitting the transfer portal. What you've got to do is stop having to replace everything every year and get some guys that can spend 2-3 years here. Perhaps this addition is one of those.
And what does strike me, though, with the past week and then this little news drop hitting, like people get the idea that we like talking about the Penny Hardaway drama. Like we talk about it because we have to and we give our opinions on it. People get the idea that we beg for the drama. We like news drops like this, big or small. This is what we like to hear from the Memphis program. We like talking about commitments. We like talking about the positives. We like talking about NIL. But the last week was anything but that.
No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. You're exactly right. As far as I'm concerned, I would rather talk about the roster, how it's shaping up, getting to these games, than frankly how uncomfortable it is talking about where it feels like Penny Hardaway is right now from a still feeling offended, still feeling attacked standpoint. I mean, I think maybe some of us were wondering, you know, after we saw that interview with him locally, where he's with MSCS, and they did a great job getting him, John Best, Marcus over there, did a great job. But you saw locally, what was that, a month ago, month and a half ago, whatever, how frustrated Penny was. I heard some of those same tones here with John Rothstein on a national level. Now, it's following some news, obviously, since. I mean, you've been plastered across ESPN. Gary Parrish has written about you because, you know, here a few weeks before the season starts, you're firing coaches, and that is odd. But again, this is where Penny's right. It's a unique situation, too, in the sense that very few have enough people on their dang staff to have all the replacements sort of ready to go here. So it's not a deal where Penny Hardaway is scrambling, trying to find out who's going to replace, you know, these 3 to 4 coaches that he let go. You've got Mike Davis right there. You've got Nolan Smith ready to jump on. You've got Jermaine Johnson. Andre Turner, you want to turn him into assistant. That's all right there. But it is. The fact that this is happening right before season, it stands out. And yet it seems like Penny was trying to tell not just what he said locally, you know, six weeks ago. Now he's trying to go out nationally and say, nothing to see here. I'm doing a great job. Everybody back off. Oh, by the way, look at my first 6 years. They're great. When, frankly, it's tough to, and again, it's uncomfortable to do this. You look at the guys that have been here at least 6 years, the last three before him, take out Tubby. Josh was better. Larry was better. Cal was making Elite Eights by year six. That's not there. And so it gets uncomfortable when Penny points to the record over six, two tournament appearances, one win, and says, I'm doing a great job and people are being too critical of me. I'm being treated unfairly. So, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but again, that was the tone. And so back to what you asked me, Gabe, to still see him sort of this frustrated, I realize that Penny is going to get scrutinized and criticized differently than most coaches. There's no question about it. I mean, there is. I mean, he's done it a different way, and he'll be judged a different way. But in the end, and he knows this better than anybody, it comes down to what you're doing between those lines.
Yep.
It comes down to record. And here in Memphis, and Penny Hardaway knows this better than anybody, because as we've continued to say, ambassador-level donor. He sat front row when the program wasn't making second weekends of tournaments, when it was when just four straight NCAA tournaments, which right now look great, Gabe, when that wasn't enough, because what? The standard, the measurement here for that program has always been, man, you know, every few years, at least every seven, every six, you got to be making it to the second weekend. It's why we ran Josh Pastner out of here despite two tournament wins, four tournament appearances in the 7 years. And so, listen, it's an uncomfortable situation to talk about when we're talking, when we're not talking about the basketball, when we're talking about what is this still worth it for Penny Hardaway? Because we always said if it got here when he was hired, well, we went through some of this with Larry, and nobody wants to do that again. Where a program legend, a hero, you know, feels like he's been, you know, feels like he's being ripped apart here by his own people. And certainly it's a different age with social media in terms of what Penny sees, but this is also a case of one of those high profile athletes we've ever had come out of this city, one of the greatest success stories we've ever had come out of this city. Frankly, he should be in the Hall of Fame with his playing career, who's never been scrutinized, picked apart, called a bad, as some have said right here, a bad coach in this instance, by his own people.
Right.
And so some of this is just, and I feel, Penny, this is where I want to just grab him and say, man, I know what you're feeling. You know, I get it. I get why you're feeling so defensive. This is your people. These are the people that have lifted you up, and now you feel like you're here to do a job for them, and they're coming down too hard on you. But this is the first time in his life where that's ever happened from Memphis, where he's getting it from Memphis. And so I understand there's a sensitivity to that, but he's saying it. You've got to develop a thicker skin. And more importantly, even if you can't do that, you have got to focus on what you can control. It's the same thing we said about Ryan Silverfield after he got to, I think it was the Temple win last year.
Yep.
And he thought he was still hearing from fans who were unhappy. He wasn't happy. You're not going to win them back over in a press conference or in a media availability or an interview with John Rothstein. The only way you go change it is what Ryan did. Go out there and win. And he did it. I mean, with a Liberty Bowl win, and let's be real, a bunch of hollow regular season wins, but damn it, it added up to 10.
It did.
He got Seth back.
Fourth one in history, by the way, to get to 10 wins.
Exactly, just the fourth time in history, and now he's got, obviously, a chance to really do something special. But more importantly, folks have bought back in. They were excited. He got his contract extension. So back to the point, Ryan, in the end, could only control what was happening on the field. I would suggest, I would beg Penny Hardaway, man, just focus on that, because all of this, you're wasting your time. I get it. I understand where it's coming from, but you're wasting your time trying to convince people of the job you've done over 6 years, brother. Let it speak for yourself and go out there and do better.
I mean,
do better than certainly what's occurred the last, you know, last half a year, last year.
I think that is well said.
Bottom line, brother.
Yep, it's a bottom line business, no matter how you're trying
Penny
to change
Hardaway,
it with your words.
Exactly. If you're Penny Hardaway, if you're Josh Pastner, it's a bottom line business, man.
Yep. Now, you mentioned that big opportunity Memphis has on the road against Florida State. How about that? 11 a.m. on Saturday. I got asked this question earlier on my show to open the show. If Memphis wins this, are they in the driver's seat in the group of five right now?
Driver's seat. Yeah, I still think so because I don't buy into what ESPN's got with Northern Illinois, their top ranked group of five.
I don't believe that
representative right now. The metrics don't. And I want to say they were picked third in their conference. We weren't talking Northern Illinois before the season because we didn't think that they were a true conference. And they might be tied for third actually in that preseason poll.
Right.
So my point is that we weren't considered. Now that said, you can't take anything away from the win that was. And right now, it's better than anything anybody's got. Boise State's obviously got what was, I mean, that could have been a win at Oregon. It's unfortunate that this isn't the opportunity that it would have been in terms of if you're saying how high could you go, you know, that this isn't the ranked Florida State team that we all thought, you know, it's probably going to compete for an ACC title. My gosh, they've gone out and lost to Georgia Tech and BC. Looks like anything but. But that said, I think, Gabe, I want to say yes. But I'm just not sure because in the end, it kind of goes back to what we're saying about Penny and Silverfield. You just got to take care of business.
Yeah, like, exactly. It's a long season, Jason. At the end of the day, this is week three.
I know. And it's just the real. And, you know, we're all into making the sweeping declarations and everything else. And here's the keys. But Memphis just needs to, frankly, you know, just lose one football game.
Yep.
And if you lose more than that, you stand the chance of probably not being able to make the college football playoff. Because I do, if you've lost two, and Liberty's sitting there undefeated, as much as I want to say, man, the committee's going to learn from last year and not put that, you know, that soft Liberty team, didn't play anybody back in. If they're sitting there with no losses and Boise State and Memphis and everybody else has got two, I just fear that they're going to go ahead and drop in the undefeated team.
Now, admittedly, Liberty's look like trash through 2 weeks.
Well, and I'm hoping it continues.
Right,
so that
exactly.
We can hopefully X them out. Looks like to me we can take UTSA out of the equation.
Oh,
I don't want to.
What was that?
But here you go. I mean, you had Heather Dinich and the FBI, the computers over to ESPN, saying UTSA was going to run the table, going to lose to Texas, not Texas State, to Texas, and that was it. Going to run the table in the American. That certainly doesn't look like the case, although, you know, I respect their coach and everything else, but it looks like that was a lot of Frank Harris, too.
Yeah, and that's also, yeah, I love being right about that. Like, that UTSA team just wasn't good enough. I don't care how easy their schedule is. You lose Frank Harris. You lost your running back a couple years ago. You don't have the same old line. Jeff Traylor's a good coach, sure, and he gets paid a lot of money. But, damn, that's a lot to replace. That's a lot to replace. I don't care who they can play. Rice, North Texas, they're going to slip up against some of those, and they just got killed by Texas State. Wasn't even close.
You're going to have enough to worry about, it feels like, having watched South Florida there for a while going toe-to-toe again. And their quarterback, I mean, we know how good. You're going to have your hands full just with them and Tulane and having to go to those two alone. We talked about all three of those games, how tough they'd be, all of them on the road. But those two in particular, and South Florida maybe even more so than we thought before the season. Some of us, John, kept telling me, I mean, this is the one you really got to watch out for. And I'm certainly higher on them now, having watched for a second straight year. I know Alabama finally came in and took care of business, but for a while there, man, that's kind of like two straight years. It's going to be a game between, you know, both DeBoer and Saban. These guys are going to try to take down. Anyway, they look tough, so you're going to have to obviously take them seriously.
Now, what's your confidence level this weekend, though, against Florida State?
I'm not brimming there. You know, I'm not out here for predicting wins or anything like that. But I will say this, and you heard a little bit of it. I mean, my partner's kind of got me a little bit more fired up about Memphis's chances, the fact that he's got them so low, the fact that we've watched the same Florida State team come out and just literally ish the bed. And I probably shouldn't have taken it there. That's an awfully graphic reference. But the way they're giving up run yards, now I'm talking to a football man now that knows this, not my partner across from me that just does a great job analyzing and breaking down the numbers. Dude, they're getting run over. They're getting mauled. Like, this isn't intricate offense stuff that Georgia Tech and BC have done here. Well, they're giving up over 5 yards per carry. It's ridiculous. And so I'm hopeful that Memphis isn't going to have to empty out the playbook here. To the point I was making to John, yeah, this would still be a big win for you, but it's not the same in terms of what it would represent if you pull it off.
Yep.
And so if we're talking about, you know, obviously Norvell was saying, I think they've gone a little vanilla here early maybe. If we're talking about saving some things or emptying out the entire playbook, you might have heard me. I'd rather do that at this point for the USFs and the Tulanes. I'd rather not dump out the playbook against Florida State trying to get this win that sure would turn a couple heads nationally. But it's not going to be the kind of win it would have been if they're still top 10. I would rather focus on what's more important at this point, and that is still winning conference games, getting to that title game, and then winning it. So if I can save a little bit and stay a little vanilla because my run game is so effective against the bad Florida State run defense, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stick with that and not show them everything, as some seem to sort of think we're going to do now. You know, there's been that narrative out there, and it makes some sense, you know, and really – you know, last week it was really, let's focus on the running game. Again, you know this better than anybody, especially as poor as it had been in that first game. You needed to know we're better than 2.3 yards per carry that we saw against, you know, against North Alabama. And so you've got that back on, you've got that on track. Hopefully the offensive line's going to be good. And to me, Gabe, that's what I'm watching the closest.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, Mario Anderson, we know, is a former SEC athlete that can go up against ACC guys. It's that offensive line that's got some dudes, but that and looks like it's maybe figuring it out here after a couple of games. I want to see how they stack up. And if they're winning, and I feel like I should be in the O-line room with you, brother. If they're winning, Memphis is going to win this game.
You will watch, especially if the first quarter, you know, Memphis is running off 5 yards a pop. You will probably watch this Florida State team fold. They've had two weeks of prep.
Exactly.
They probably feel, you know, like, okay, we're really hyped up. I feel like after a first quarter, you're up. If you get an early lead, this team could fold really easily. I'll say this, though, about sort of emptying the clip, that conversation you brought up. I think this past game, they could open it up a little bit more because Florida State's probably sat there for 2 weeks saying, damn, man, everybody's running on us. We were supposed to have the best defensive line in the country.
Now that's true.
Mike Norvell's stepping up, threatening everybody's job because that's what he does when you have a couple of losses, I can tell you, to have a peek behind the curtain. So they're probably fired up to go stop the run. I feel like this is a week for Seth Hennigan, Demir Blankensy, Rock Taylor to finally open up and pass a little bit. They didn't do it last week. They didn't really do it in North Alabama. We haven't even seen them open up and get those deep shots downfield. We have not seen them scheme those open.
And this is where my analyst partner, my numbers man partner, may end up being right because his point was one of the same. He's listening to Kramsey and reading some of the things that he's talked about. And those guys have been getting doubled. And the feeling is, and John brought this up on our show, you know, is Florida State going to try to double those guys or are they going to try to stop the run? I'm with you on that part. You're going to, after being embarrassed the first 2 weeks, you're going to concentrate on trying to stop that run. And my guess is because you've got quote unquote ACC athletes, you're going to try to cover Rock and Blankensy with one guy rather than the two that they've seen. And so back to y'all's point. Early, we're going to have a chance to take some downfield shots in one-on-one. Absolutely, if that is there, you take that. And it could, the way you guys have, the way you've sort of schemed that up, the way, you know, you could see Florida State ganging up, stacking the box, saying we're going to cover these guys one-on-one. We don't have to double their receivers. And so if it plays that way, there's going to be some early shots that you can take, and hopefully that happens as well.
And we saw Rock Taylor catch for 100 yards on a really good secondary from Mizzou last year, so they have the ability
exactly
to do
right.
it. I truly think the offensive skill position battle is absolutely 100%, no doubt, won by Memphis in this game. That's what I believe.
I'd like to see that, and then sort of I just want to continue to see Chandler and Elijah Martin just flying around in that second level, man, because it's been fun. Again, now's the chance to show it to us against a higher level opponent. Certainly, step up last week, and now you get another, you know, maybe a couple of steps up doing it against the ACC. But that dude, they've been flying. They look like they're having fun, and hopefully, it's going to continue. And that defense is doing what we need it to do. So far, again, it's two games in. It's early. It's small sample size. But this is the kind of improvement we said they had to make if you were going to really have a shot at winning the conference and going to a college football playoff.
So, Jason, Connor asked me this question yesterday. He goes, what do you think Norvell's going to want to do offensively? Like, I know what he wants to do. I know what he wants to do, but can he do it with the set of circumstances he has at the quarterback position? He's going to have to try to run the ball, keep that offense on pace, and then give DJ some easy reads. But that's not what he wants to do. He came into this season with a completely different plan, hopefully using DJ's arm a little bit more.
Exactly.
But we have seen time after time he will miss throws. He's uncomfortable. And even if he hits a couple of those shots, you don't feel like he can continue to do it.
Yeah, I've rarely, if ever, maybe it's that first year at Clemson, but seeing DJ in a rhythm, like to your point, even if he hits a couple. Here's the other thing, and I don't know his name, you might, but the receiver that's coming back, Norvell's talked about maybe him not just being big for DJ in the passing game, but the run game. having him back on the field and the attention that he'll draw. And maybe that's it. I mean, I doubt that it's a key that's going to all of a sudden unlock, you know, this offense. I just think he picked the wrong quarterback. I think he looked at we talked about this too. I think he looked at DJ and said, in my system, he'll take off. And other coaches have sort of made that mistake before, with DJ. And listen, he's, you know, I mean, coming behind Trevor, we sort of crowned him as, oh, we must be good. And so he was always up against that. But in the end, you just have not. I mean, a lot of this for me goes back to DJ Uiagalelei, where, listen, there's got to be improvement on a year-to-year basis. I mean, I've watched Seth Hennigan get better year-to-year. And so this experience is supposed to lead to, at some point, a better quarterback, a guy that can make better reads, a guy that can get into a rhythm and really take over a game. And I've never seen the sort of growth from DJ that you expected, and certainly didn't live up to the expectations that many sort of placed on him, as opposed to, you know, him telling us he was going to be the next Trevor Lawrence. I guess it was us just also all of us sort of assuming that with where he was in the rankings and then coming behind him for Dabo.
Now, speaking of growth, I think Caleb Williams, your guy with the Bears, I know you got the dub last week, but I imagine only growth from here, only upward trajectory from here after 93 yards worth of passing.
He better grow. I mean, you just wait. You better, if he's smart, he'd have gone out and done something for special teams and his Bears defense after last week, because that's who won the game for him. And a leader would recognize that. You know, that was so. I mean, Caleb Williams, for the most part, whether it was, you know, nerves, whether it was he saw a bunch of vanilla defenses and a bunch of twos and threes and fours in the preseason, like, it was completely different. His first regular season game, as opposed to what he'd seen in the preseason, he looked like a deer in headlights. He looked like a guy. Last time I talked to you, Gabe, you were pointing out how long he's holding on the ball.
Yep.
He wants to make a play on every play. There's got to be more routine, and there has to be more on script. 1, 2, 3, get it out of there. And he was not ready to do that against those Titans and Jeffrey Simmons. Those guys, I mean, they get enough pressure where you can shake up a rookie, and we saw that for basically a whole half. And, you know, I know they got the field goal in the first half, and that ended up being pretty big to kind of get the momentum started. But that was all about, you know, special teams and defense that second half, because even in the second half, he couldn't get rolling. There's a lot of learning that must be done on the part of Caleb Williams. And listen, I sat there and I watched, you know, because the next game was Jaden Daniels. They caught him in the 325 slot. And he was making – listen, Jaden Daniels doesn't have it figured out either. As much as I love him to death and I worry that maybe the Bears got the wrong one, dude, he's trying to run on every play. And that's not going to work in this league, especially as slender and as thin as you are. And so all of them, as much as we laud these rookie quarterbacks, we were saying in the preseason, are all of these guys going to be hits, right? It's never that. There's always busts. Zach Wilson, there's always busts. No, we got a real taste of – you know, the struggles that are sure to still be there for these guys. It's an entirely different ballgame once you hit the regular season, and football guys know that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. They're like, usually in college you feast off of broken coverages. You don't see that in the NFL. It just doesn't happen. Unless it's Xavier Worthy down the sideline and Marlon Humphrey doesn't want to follow him on Thursday Night Football. But, I mean, like, you just don't see those coverage busts. And I think Caleb Williams is sitting there hoping some of that happens, hoping he can extend the play and see those coverages eventually bust. But you have NFL athletes now. It's completely different. But I will say, just generally, quarterback play, it doesn't matter if it's a rookie or a vet, it's down. It's not the same.
Down.
It's not.
Down,
I mean, it has been that way the past couple of years.
But I'm not buying into now, it's time to run the ball again, and now we're going to get back to grinding it out and getting back to running
heart,
backs.
Jason. Come on, that breaks my heart.
I got running backs going in the first round again, where we got four or five of those. No, I don't think we're getting back there yet. And again, it will pick up. We've got a lot of young quarterbacks playing. Not even AR. You know, again, a guy who barely played as a rookie last year, but you could basically call him a rookie this year. I think that's a lot of it. And then some of these vets are just. Man, they're out there bad. I mean, Kirk Cousins, nobody expected to see what we thought he'd be healthy. Doesn't look healthy. And so hopefully that'll get a little better with the quarterback play.
Yeah, he couldn't press off that Achilles. He couldn't do it.
He could not. And you need it. He needs it for that play action he loves to run. Like, you got to have a little bit of that pop, and it was gone.
I think it was after the game. You have the OC and the head coach said, we need to take more deep shots. We need to get to push the ball downfield. Well, you have a guy behind Kirk Cousins who can do that. He could potentially do that in Michael Penix. But we'll see if they go to him.
Well, I mean, you just paid the guy in front of him a heck of that money that you didn't need to, if that was the case.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Jason, I appreciate it, man. Looking forward to my spot tomorrow, the home and home.
Can't wait. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir.
Look forward to it. Yep.
It's Jason Smith from Jason and John, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. He is on X at JasonSmith929. And he's brought to you by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. You pass it all the time when you're driving on Poplar, but stop passing and go in. Right off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station, 964 June Road to be exact. On the top floor, they have all your hunting and outdoor essentials, but since we're in football season, that's all I have to point you in the direction of. If you need your tailgating gear, your garb, they have the best brands of clothing you could possibly imagine. Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen Main. Go get your Memphis State Pouncer Polo. Go get a Memphis Polo. Go get your Ole Miss Polo. If you're a Tennessee fan, get a Tennessee Polo. Alabama, they have all you could possibly need. Your favorite teams are there at Oxbow. But on top of that, they have vintage tees. They have everything you could possibly imagine from a clothing perspective at 964 June Road. And they have the tailgating gear. So if you're getting out to go tailgate, yeah, you're going to be styling with that polo you bought. But you can get cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, and the best brands, Arctic. They have Yeti. Everything you need, conveniently placed, one location, 964 June Road at Oxbow. And you can also go online, shopoxbow.com. Again, shopoxbow.com. And when you go there, you can use my promo code, TheGabeShow, all caps, no spaces, TheGabeShow, to get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. Whether you're going online or in-store, 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. We need to get to a trip around the National Football League next, so make sure you stick around. Into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it.
The Miami Dolphins.
All right, we need to start with this because Thursday Night Football is coming up tomorrow, and this could affect some betting lines. And a lot of these are going to be injury report related because it is a Wednesday. It's midweek. They're starting to get that injury report all put together. But the Dolphins may be, and they're a 1.5-point favorite against the Bills at home. They may be without running backs. Like, who are they going to play? Raheem Mostert is out. He is not going to play. And then Devin Achane, who is, I absolutely love that guy. I think he's unbelievable when he's on the field, but he's been hurt the better part of his entire NFL career. He's questionable for the game, so you need to pay attention before the game goes tomorrow. Get those fantasy teams right. Make sure if you have some money on the Dolphins, you know who they're going to run out there at running back. But both of their running backs are dealing with injuries. But David Achane, it's looking like it's a little more positive. It's going to be a game-time decision, so pay attention to it.
The Cincinnati Bengals.
They're just, man, we'll talk about another Cincinnati Bengals story a little bit later when we get into the Blitz. And it has to do with Ja'Marr Chase and the contract he ended up denying. But T. Higgins, who they have not paid, and they gave him the franchise tag, he still hasn't practiced this week for the Bengals. They're playing the Chiefs on Sunday. Now, weirdly enough, like, I don't know if you feel this way about the Bengals. I mentioned the stat yesterday. You know, Joe Burrow's 5-1 against Allen and Mahomes, but he's also 0-5 against Baker Mayfield and Jacoby Brissett. It's just a strange thing. But, you know, even with T. Higgins maybe out for the game, who knows? The Bengals may just surprise the hell out of us and win that game. But if they don't have him, I don't feel very strongly about the Bengals this weekend. But T. Higgins is out, and I feel like, and I mentioned it yesterday, it's hard at times to put Joe Burrow in the same conversation as Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson simply because he doesn't lift up the rest of the team around him. It feels like he needs T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase on the field at all times, and he hasn't gotten that through the early part of the season. We'll see how he fares without potentially T. Higgins against the Chiefs on Sunday.
Did you see what Joe Burrow had to say about the wrist video?
What?
He said, I just drank water and that it feels better this week than it did last week. So it's continuously getting better. And he says that it absolutely has no effect on him throwing.
BS. Buddy, we watched, okay? You underthrew every deep shot in that game. You can't fool us, Joe. You can't. We saw you wiggling it around like it's the camera is on you at all times, and we saw that it bothered you.
He's also on the injury report because of his wrist.
Oh, it doesn't bother him at all. Doesn't bother him at all. Probably a limited participant in certain things today. Yeah, doesn't bother you. Sure.
The San Francisco 49ers.
Now, I know it's going to be bothersome. I know a lot of people pick Christian McCaffrey with their first pick in their fantasy drafts. He's iffy for week two in Minnesota, but it's taken a dark turn. It's taken a dark turn here. Achilles tendonitis. It's not just his calf at this point. And I understand, like, calf, connected to the Achilles, and it could lead to things like this. But Achilles tendonitis, it weakens your Achilles. You cannot rush through this. I understand that the 49ers have Jordan Mason, and he had, what, 28 carries, 147 yards, a TD. He looked great. But at the same time, you want Christian McCaffrey back at some point. But it may be a lot longer that he's on the sideline than we were giving credit for to start the year. You do not want to play with an Achilles with a guy that makes that amount of money, with a guy that means that much to your football team. So Christian McCaffrey, I would imagine he's probably not going to play this week, but something to monitor throughout this year, because there's a lot of people in fantasy football that rely on him. But I think more importantly, the 49ers rely upon him, and they do not want to take a chance with that thing.
The Chicago Bears.
Chicago Bears, I don't know if you saw this, but it looks like two of their three main wide receivers, DJ Moore is going to be okay, but it looks like Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze did not practice today. They did not practice today. Keenan Allen has a heel issue. It's been harder for him as he's gotten later into his career to stay on the field. And then Roma Dunze has a knee issue that kept him out of practice. So Caleb Williams, a week after throwing for 93 yards, is going to be potentially down two of his starting three wide receivers. And I will say, if you believe in what he can accomplish against the Texans on Monday night, you'd probably take some DJ Moore over. That would be the smartest thing to do in this situation. But we'll pay attention to how this progresses throughout the week.
The Miami Dolphins.
Back to Tyreek Hill and the situation that arose last Sunday when he was thrown to the ground by police officers and everything like that. He has called for the firing again, yet again, of the police officer that threw him to the ground and then went after his teammates. And I will say I agree with him. That police officer, yeah, Tyreek Hill didn't handle his situation very well, and he was very aggressive, very confrontational, but that police officer was very aggressive to anyone who showed up in the situation. And to handcuff the Walter Payton Man of the Year, Calais Campbell, to go to Jonnu Smith and just go after him for trying to check in on his teammate, it was ridiculous. He just met those guys with an aggression that is terrifying from a police officer. It was not a well-balanced attitude that he had about the entire situation. You cannot be that scared as a police officer, if that's what he's claiming, and do your job at a very high level. You can be reactionary, and we've seen how being reactionary can end in the past, and no one wants to see that. I don't ever want to call for anyone's job and their livelihood. That stinks. But at the same time, I don't know if mentally that police officer was in the right space to take on that situation. Now, also, I will say this, and I'm glad that Tyreek Hill was able to admit this. He did say, I did not handle that situation as well as I should have. And I would agree with him wholeheartedly. To be safe in situations like that, just do what the police officer says. Give him the license and registration. Move on with your life. I think it would be doing a disservice to act as if Tyreek Hill doesn't have any blame in this situation. If you want to be safe in those situations, don't do what Tyreek Hill did. Don't give attitude. Don't do any of that, because you escalate the situation. I understand the police officers are at blame for not de-escalating the situation, but don't even take a chance with escalating the situation. Tyreek Hill admitted that today. He said, I did a terrible job of de-escalating that situation. I did a terrible job of approaching them with the attitude and the confrontation that I brought toward them.
So, agreed. You shouldn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to be perfect, and or else things happen.
You shouldn't have to be perfect, but also, I would say, in that situation, try to be as close to perfect as possible to avoid bad things, to avoid the worst possible outcome.
I think Tyreek Hill needs to take it upon himself.
I hate that that's what it is.
Gotta be perfect.
And there needs to be, that is a question that we will continue to ask as long as these things perpetuate.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think, as a citizen, as a person who has to deal with these things daily, you need to take it upon yourself to try to be as close to perfect as possible to avoid the terrible outcomes. Don't put yourself in danger just because you have pride, I guess is sort of the message there.
Just
because you're angry does not mean you need to put your livelihood and your life in danger.
I just can't stop thinking about, if that's how the officers acted with Tyreek Hill and NFL players,
I'm kind of curious.
It's not the first time,
yeah. But, it could go a lot worse, 100%, if a random person gave them attitude like
that.
No,
my point is that somebody that approaches a situation with that type of aggressiveness, that's not a one-time thing.
Yes, agreed. 100% agree. Now, we do have week two of the NFL season coming up, and you know what pairs good with week two? A bottle of Old Dominic. You can get gin, you can get vodka, you can get toddy, you can get whiskey, even have bourbon. I love the bourbon. Get the 90.1 proof bourbon for the 901 because they're right here in the city of Memphis. It's fresh, it's full, best spirit you can buy in this city. And there should be no surprise why that is the case because the distillery is right here, downtown Memphis, right on the riverfront. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. They have events all of the time. Just go to their website, olddominic.com, to check those out. You can book a tour and tasting at olddominic.com and also check out all of their great products. And you can ship Old Dominic spirits anywhere in the United States of America. I get them as a gift at the holidays because my family loves the whiskey and the bourbon. So make sure you can get that done at olddominic.com if you so choose. And always remember, they're the official spirit of the Memphis Grizzlies. They have two bar locations inside FedEx Forum. So if you're watching a Tiger or a Grizzly game or going for a concert or seeing a comedian, whatever it is, make sure you stop at one of those two bar locations and enjoy a craft cocktail by Old Dominic. And always remember to enjoy responsibly. Enjoy responsibly. Old Dominic Distillery, come say hi. And we need to go ahead and wrap up hour number two. Coming up next, we'll get to small talk.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. A lot of silliness today. And I'm going to start with the most silly thing I saw in the morning. I don't know if you saw it, Connor, on Instagram.
I heard it.
Shannon Sharp was on Instagram Live, but we didn't see Shannon Sharp's face. In fact, we just saw a ceiling. But in the background, you could hear what I can only define as sex noises. They were sex noises. And I don't know if it was Shannon. I'd have to assume it was Shannon. He ended up responding afterwards, and a lot of people got video of the alleged incident here. Shannon Sharp said he got hacked this morning, and they're looking into it. Buddy, I don't think he got hacked. I think somehow it went on live, or your partner put it on live, and there was some type of expose there, but you heard all the noises. I can just say that.
I'm going to be honest. I understand that it's an inappropriate thing to be on Instagram Live, and it was an accident and all those things. Really nothing wrong with it, in my opinion. He was laying it down, good for Shannon. That sex is a normal part of human life. It shouldn't have been on Instagram Live. But the whole, like, I got hacked thing, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, that's
it was an accident. He clearly didn't do it on purpose. You don't have to say you got hacked. He didn't do anything. My point being is, like, you didn't do anything wrong. Good for you.
Congrats on the sex. Connor's take on this incident. Congrats on the sex.
Good for him. He had a good morning. Solid morning.
He had a solid morning.
Good for him.
Except for finding out that it was on Instagram Live.
Sounded like it was going well.
It did. And I will say, a little too much huffing and puffing from Shannon. It was a little much. Sounded like he was running marathon in there. Sounds like he was running a damn marathon. I know he's big and swole, but we need to get the cardio up.
Over at Club Shay Shay, if they do not get this man a For Hims ad now, they are doing something wrong over there. Their sales department.
Oh, you think Shannon needs? You think he needs Hims?
I'm not saying.
Come on, don't accuse him of something like that.
Every single person that reads For Hims ads needs For Hims.
Sure. Yeah. No. That's bad. You got me. You got me. I get it. But yeah, there'd be a missed opportunity.
Good
or maybe
should have been on Instagram.
Are they the mints? The mints. The Hims mints.
I have no idea. Yeah. I think there's gummies, there's pills, there's mints, I don't know.
Yeah, but it'd be a missed opportunity after that.
But no, good for him. He didn't do anything wrong. Shouldn't have been on live. That's an accident. But I just don't.
No, you didn't because you've never been hacked before and you didn't get hacked after.
It'd be a weird thing for somebody to hack.
They probably would have done more with the hack than just that.
And they have impeccable timing. The timing of said act.
Yes.
Impeccable.
Did they know? I mean, if they were hacking, they had an idea. They knew it was an appointment. they had your schedule down to a T. Now, can we do a little bit of speculation here? How do you think this started? How do you think that the damn Instagram Live started?
He was probably on Instagram posting something before it happened, and then they got going.
So maybe he didn't click the lock button.
It happens to me.
Mistake.
Dude.
Mistake.
Sometimes if I put my phone in my pocket, it will go to the live page on it. Like, it has happened to me with the phone in my hand.
So this was a butt dialed Instagram Live.
Maybe dialed with something else?
Yeah. A butt dialed Instagram Live.
Probably
I'm just using the term butt dialed. Could have been, didn't have to be a butt.
Yeah. An appendage did it.
Yeah. All right. Now to another silly thing that it really pisses me off, quite frankly. But listen, lawyers have to lawyer. So we remember the situation that unfolded before the season with Ricky Pearsall getting shot in the chest.
I do.
It avoided all of his interior, you know, all of his internal organs. But he was struggling with a 17-year-old from California who was attempting to rob him. Now, there is a lawyer, Dunlap is his last name, who is representing the 17-year-old who did wrong there and tried to rob and then shot Ricky Pearsall. And here's what he had to say today in defense. This is his defense of his client. It was a rather extended struggle between Mr. Pearsall and my client. They were really fighting back and forth on the sidewalk. As you might imagine, Mr. Pearsall gets the best of it. He does, kind of. I don't know if you've ever wrestled or not. A nice hip toss and throws my client to the ground and ends up on top of him. I think the video supports that this is an attempted robbery and not an attempted murder, because that's what they're trying to charge him with, attempted murder. I don't know if you know, Mr. Dunlap. Listen, there's more than one type of murder. It doesn't have to be premeditated. It could be second degree, third degree. It could be manslaughter, attempted manslaughter, that type of thing. This was attempted murder. I don't give a damn how you try to. I know you're trying to lawyer this thing up, but that is, I know Jeffrey did it earlier. That is the definition of telling your story, not the story.
Is Charlie Day his lawyer? Is he going to bring up bird law eventually? That's one of the worst statements I've ever heard from a lawyer.
It angers the hell out of me. It really does.
One of the they were in a fight, so he shot him. Like, what? That's your defense? Is that? No, it was a robbery. He just happened to shoot him. But it wasn't a murder.
It's 100% an attempted murder.
Yes.
He knows that there's more than one type of attempted murder.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? Doesn't have to be premeditated. It doesn't have to be like that.
You
type
know
of
where
thing.
The murder part comes degree. In? It's the gunshot.
The gunshot when he was robbing the guy.
It may have been a robbery, and then
the
it
only
turned
person
into
defending
murder.
Themselves in this situation is Ricky Pearsall by the lay of the law. But I will say to Mr. Dunlap, really hard case to defend. Really hard case. Probably a public defender. I don't know.
Bird
but
law.
It's really, really hard to defend a client who does this.
I would have probably gone with something different though than. Technically.
Okay. Well, okay. You would have gone with something different. Let's hear it.
I would have probably gone for a plea deal. Hey, he shot that dude. How do we get this thing as down as possible?
If I'm Ricky Pearsall, there's no plea deal. There's no plea deal that I am willing to put on the table.
I don't know
If I'm his representation, I don't think it's up to him.
I don't think that's how law works. I'm pretty sure it's up to the state.
Up to the state? You think the state's going to let this slide?
I don't think Ricky Pearsall gets to go, no, actually, I want him to be punished this
way.
Well,
long. Don't both sides have to, agree to some type of plea deal? To plea it down?
We talk about sports. We're too dumb for this conversation.
Yeah.
Where's Jeff? I don't think that Pearsall, though, gets to decide, we're not going to take that. I'm just saying, going with the, it was actually a robbery, and just acting like he didn't shoot him is a hell of a choice.
Yeah. It wasn't attempted murder. It was just attempted robbery. Okay. Yeah. Great job. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. We'll come back for hour number 3. We'll open up talking some college football with Colton Denning from Two Stripes CPD. He's next.